Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, if you love our veterans, I think you're going to be touched by today's story. Sometimes even the strongest people around us, they need validation. And you're going to hear about that kind of a story today. And then, what can we learn from two dogs on opposite sides of the fence? Well, I'm going to tell you how it helps us to understand both our training and our faith by watching those two dogs. And joining me for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. How's your week been?
It's well, you know, it got really cool here for a couple of weeks.
And it's going to be cool next week.
But it got hot in between.
Yeah.
And man, did I suffer.
Yeah.
I had one of those crash and burn runs. Probably the worst run I've had in a couple of years.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it was just the heat and humidity. That's the thing. I think it's been the humidity. It's
it's been thick.
It hasn't been crazy hot, but the humidity has just been crazy. And I don't know what it is. I've been trying different things. I got one more thing to try. At least one more thing. Something's going on, though. I'm sweating literally double as much as I did just probably 5-6 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. And I can't figure it out. I'll stop every 3 miles to get a good drink of water, and I can't keep myself hydrated.
Yeah.
And so I'm working on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's strange. I went out on Monday. You know, I've been rucking, and I'm kind of at the limit of what they recommend as far as weight in the bag. They say don't go over a third of your body weight, and that's well, I'm actually
a little over that
right now. And so I was kicking around the idea of adding some more weight, you know. You and I are kind of the same. So I thought, I'm just going to start going faster. And so Monday, I went a lot faster than I normally do. Felt great. I did my body weight stuff that I do. Felt great. And I was like, man, it's just everything's clicking on all cylinders. And then yesterday, I thought I was dying. And I was going half the speed, it felt like. And so it's just this time of year, you know, with the weather and I don't know.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Like I always say, got to have bad days.
Right.
Otherwise, you have nothing to compare the good days to.
I had one yesterday for sure. So you live, you learn.
Absolutely. All right. Post of the week comes from Rebecca Wang. She said, today I found the perfect race on Roku. I see why Dean likes it so much. I got a bit of cross training in while learning a bunch from this movie. Great stuff. And then I commented on it and I said, check out the starter in the race scenes. You may recognize him.
You know, it's amazing how many times you and I have been out together and people come running up and say, hey, are you the starter in that running movie?
Yeah, right.
No, that's pretty cool that she won. I had no idea it was on Roku.
I didn't either. But I saw this and I wanted to take the chance because Dave Cristiano is the guy who did this race. He did this movie. He did the prequel to it, the Remember the Goal movie. And he is really, really passionate about the gospel. Mm-hmm. And presenting the gospel in these movies. And you will see the gospel very boldly proclaimed in both of these movies.
Sure.
And I like to support Dave. As a matter of fact, I just learned this week that Dave had posted something about the potential for doing a third movie in this series.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. And if that's the case.
We hadn't heard from him in a while. I hadn't heard from him.
No. Yeah. I would love to see a third one.
Now, was it Remember the Goal that a few of the girls in that movie came to our half marathon? Was that?
Yes.
Am I thinking that correctly?
It was.
Yeah.
Yep. There were, I think, 4 of the stars in that, right?
Yeah.
The leading character and one of the other runners on the team, I know. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting to know them.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, this movie, The Perfect Race, also has I bring up the starter because I was the starter guy. And I actually have a line in this movie.
Yeah.
All I say is runner set, but it's a line.
I mean, you're Hollywood now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. But it was more than that because Debbie's in this movie. Mm-hmm. She's an official up under the tent behind a computer. Darren Lewis and Wendy Lewis, they were in the crowd in the scene. And then several of the runners that I was coaching at the time are in the running scenes as in those races. And so it's pretty cool to see all of those people that I know. But, you know, for you out there, if you enjoy this podcast and you've kind of gotten to know us, it's maybe a neat connection. So check out on Roku, I guess, you can go and find the perfect race and probably remember the goal, too. If the perfect race is on there, I'm sure remember the goal is as well.
Yeah.
So watch Remember the Goal first. Although you don't have to watch one before the other, watch Remember the Goal first. You kind of get to know the main character, and then she's also in the perfect race.
Yeah.
So good stuff. Run of the week comes from Sarah Paget with Dexter Jean Paget. It says, Fort Frenzy Ultra Festival Recap. Alex freaking crushed it. I can't speak this morning. Hit his minor goal and got third overall. Dexter, now you have to understand, Alex is 10 years old, and he got third overall in this race. Dexter, unfortunately, did not have the race he hoped to have. We realized about 8 hours in, he was not doing well. We tried all the tricks and tips, but the extreme heat and humidity was beating him up. I made the call to take him to the ER in Maryville, and then the ER doctor made the call to admit him due to rhabdomyolysis. He's doing much better this afternoon after about 6,000 milliliters of fluids. And should get to come home tomorrow. I do want to say how thankful I am for April Romeo, Chris, and another woman whose name I didn't get that helped me break down our camp and load everything in the Explorer in under 30 minutes. East Coast Adventures was awesome as usual and had a good event. So I point this one out not to scare people.
Yeah.
But this is a thing.
Yeah.
Rhabdomyolysis doesn't happen very often, but it does sometimes, particularly when you try to do extreme things. And in this case, Dexter's out there running for 8 hours in this extreme conditions. And this is what it says. Rhabdomyolysis is a serious medical condition where damaged skeletal muscle breaks down rapidly, releasing its components, including proteins like myoglobin, into the bloodstream. This release can be harmful to the kidneys and can cause acute kidney injury or even kidney failure if not treated promptly. Some of the causes are trauma or crash injuries, extreme physical exertion, obviously this situation, drug or medication use, like statins, cocaine, heroin, amphetamines, genetic muscle diseases, prolonged immobilization, infections, extreme in body temperatures, metabolic or electrolyte disorders as well. And then some of the symptoms, muscle pain, swelling, and tenderness, general weakness and muscle stiffness, dark or tea-colored urine, and then decreased urine output. Also vomiting, confusion, or irregular heartbeat in severe cases. So this obviously is something that turns out to be worse in heat and humidity. So it's that time of the year to try to, you got to be careful with these things. So if you're doing long runs out there in the heat, that's fine. It's fine. Just be prepared.
Pay attention.
Make sure you're getting, and pay attention to yourself. Because, I've shared on here, I've gotten myself into some bad shape on hot and humid days. And I, matter of fact, I was headed there this past weekend and I stopped early because I needed to, or I was going to be, I don't know if it was going to be as bad as Dexter, but I was going to be in a bad spot. And,
I wonder if this is this, and I'm glad you said it. What?
Rhabdomyolysis.
I wonder if that's like a prequel to, remember when I did a little bit of research on blood lung a few years ago?
Yeah.
And that is, that is the taste that. And it's not everybody that you don't experience it. And it said, I think one out of every so many people experience this. But it was extreme. It happens when I push myself, like in a mile race, which to me is the worst thing on earth. But you have this taste of blood when you get done. And I used to call it blood lung. And sure enough, it was the secretion of proteins being released into the bloodstreams and goes into the lung, and specifically myoglobin. So I wonder if this is kind of along those same, blood lung is not as serious as this, obviously.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, but that's interesting.
And an interesting fact, this is just completely not related to running. It's related to cooking, more specifically steaks. When you have a medium or medium rare steak And what you think you see is blood is not actually blood. It's myoglobin. That is what that compound is that everybody thinks of as blood. It's not actually blood. So just a fun fact for you.
There you go. Yeah. You're learning stuff all the time on this podcast. Our trivia question from last week. We would all guess that Kenya and Ethiopia would have the most elite marathoners, and we would be correct. They are 1 and 2. But which country produces the third highest number of elite marathoners? After I asked this one, I realized, I think we've asked this one before. I think we've covered this before. So if you've been a long-time listener and you already knew the answer to this, I'm sorry for covering it again, maybe. But it is interesting to me. Because 20 years ago, I would have said maybe the United States was probably number three, but we're not. Japan is way ahead of us. And despite their population is way less than half of ours. It's a little more than a third of ours. And, of course, Kenya, they're even smaller than Japan is. But did you know that Ethiopia is a little bit bigger than Japan population-wise? Would you have guessed that?
No.
I never would have guessed that. Ethiopia is the 10th largest country in the world, population-wise, and Japan is 11th. I never would have guessed it. Anyway, this is a culture thing. All of this is culture-related. Kenya, they call it the land of running for a reason, because if you want to be a big-time celebrity in Kenya, become a great runner, and you'll become the celebrity there, because it's that big of a deal. Ethiopia, they have some other sports, but running is still really, really big there and big part of the culture. They're both relatively poor countries, and so a lot of times people use running to get from place to place, and that is part of, again, their culture. In Japan, obviously, that's not the issue, but in Japan, they don't have the same high school and college track and field and cross-country structure that we have. They do have those things for those ages, but they have other things like Ekiden. Ekiden is a really good example of how they, and Ekiden is like relay races with, with teams. So they'll have youth teams, they have corporate teams, they have college teams that do these Ekiden races, and they're longer distance races. Most of them are on the roads or things like that. So people get used to that, running longer distances on the road at a very young age in Japan. And that leads them to marathoning being the premier distance, because they don't pay that much attention across to track or cross country.
Sure.
So it makes sense, but it's kind of an interesting thought. I think in the United States, and the reason why Japan has more than we do is because in the United States, we have so many sports.
Yeah.
We've seen it. We've seen it in the high school level. We've seen really, really good runners who don't run cross country because they play another sport.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe the best runner that's ever lived is a United States basketball player. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we would often see tons of talent in a young athlete, and we would try our best to pull them either from, I'm thinking of one end, you know, cheerleading.
Yeah.
She was an incredible runner, and it was like, no, I'm going to cheer next year. Like, oh, really? Come on.
Yeah.
But interestingly, Japan is also one of the leaders in track cycling.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I assumed that was kind of European-centric.
Track cycling. Because they're very... No, I guess everybody that's in track cycling is this way. But for whatever reason, the Japanese have a natural propensity to produce a high RPM. If you've ever seen some of these guys on like rollers...
Yeah.
I mean, they're spinning like 220 RPM. On these bikes. I mean, you can't even see their legs moving hardly. It's like just a blur.
Huh.
So,
it's interesting because I've seen a lot of Japanese runners who take much shorter strides and have a higher turnover as runners.
I don't know if it's something in their
a genetic
DNA
thing.
I don't know. But I know on the bike, they can turn some cadence for sure.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, Dean. So, you know, every once in a while, my kids will send me a podcast because that's all young people do is listen to podcasts nowadays. So my oldest son, Lane, sent me this podcast. It was, again, it was a Joe Rogan podcast. And I don't normally listen to Rogan unless it's the guest on there, somebody that I'm really drawn to, because he does have some language. But this guy kind of countered that. And I think we've talked about this guy on here before. But his name is Chad Wright. He is a...
I listened to that one.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he is a former Navy SEAL.
Mm-hmm.
Has a radical, wild salvation story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just leave that there. You can go listen to it. Got out of the Navy and became an ultramarathoner. He's a very accomplished ultramarathoner. And... has created a nonprofit organization that he does. But this guy said some things that really I like. Number one, I like him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a beard that's anybody that grows a beard, they just envy this guy. I mean, it's 2 feet long.
You know, we played him on
I was thinking it was the same guy on the Unashamed podcast. He was on the Unashamed podcast. He's been on Rich Roll, and I've watched some documentary. I've dug all deep into this guy.
Yeah.
But before I get into some things that he said, I'm cautiously optimistic. I reached out to this guy and said, "We want you to come on the Upward Running podcast." You know where he lives?
Tennessee.
No.
Isn't it? Oh, I thought he lived in Tennessee.
He lives in Gore, Georgia, which is 25 minutes from here.
Really?
On the other side of, like, where Villanow is.
Huh.
Remember Rocky Mountain Recreation Area, where we used to do a triathlon for the kids down? It was north of Rome.
I never went there, but I know where you're talking about.
Well, I mean, all the scenes that you see in some of his documentaries, he's there. I mean, he's just right down the road.
I don't know why I was thinking Tennessee. Anyway.
Yeah. And so anyway, I reached out to him and I said, "Look, I don't know how our paths have never crossed." I said, "But I want to sit down and talk to you. I know you've been on these big podcasts before, but you're literally right down the road and you love hunting and fishing and you can sit in our podcast and watch deer out the window. So we want you to come on." Anyway, but he said some things that are kind of counter the normal things that you hear, like Navy SEALs say, David Goggins, some of those personalities.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of their mantras are be hard, you know, just always in that personality. He says, be hard when it matters.
Oh, I like that.
He said, it's, you can't, if you live like that, you're miserable.
Yeah.
And he wasn't saying anything about those other guys. He's saying, for me, be hard when it matters, not all the time, because when you're in that zone, there's no love. There's no, you know, this is kind of bred into Navy SEALs is kind of what he was saying. But he talked about the power of the spoken word. And this was really interesting. And he said, there is a huge chasm between what you're thinking and what you're saying. And he's talking about in ultra races and even in SEAL training and some of the missions that he went on, while he would not get into any details on those, he talked about how many people he's been around in races and in like BUDS, which is the SEAL training, that he could see these guys thinking, this is hard. But he says almost always the moment they say it, it's very soon after they quit.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about don't give your thoughts the spoken word, because that's when they become reality. When it comes out of your mouth, we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
You know, you hear yourself say things.
Yep.
And you put doubt. Doubt can be in your mind, but the moment you say it, you hear it and you process it differently. That was really cool. It's kind of like we talk about smiling,
mm-hmm.
even when you're hurting, what that does to your psyche.
Yep.
And it can actually make you feel better, even though nothing has changed except you're smiling. He said it kind of works in the reverse for speaking, the spoken word. The other big thing that I loved about Chad is I love it when people, you can tell there's some, and we may talk about this on down in the story.
Yeah.
I'm going to save that till we get down in the story. The last thing that he said that I loved, and I kind of chuckled because you and I can, we can get on these banters. We did before this podcast, and I was thinking, that's why I wrote that. You saw me writing it down. You saw me writing something down when we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
He said, you will never hear me. This was in a different podcast. This wasn't in the Rogan. This was in the Rich Roll. He said, you will never hear me going out and protesting. You will never hear me giving the spoken word to things that I don't agree with. He said, I champion the things I agree with.
Hmm.
And it was fascinating to hear him talk about that. He said, because now he said there's times that you need to make your voice heard. But as a culture, we've taken this way too far.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you can be much more effective and have more peace and happiness championing the things that you agree with. And it kind of brought me back to the story that our friend David Hendricks wrote about the counterfeit money.
Yeah.
They don't teach you how to identify counterfeit. They teach you how to identify the real thing. It kind of made the same parallel to me that we tend to, and the media perpetuates this, but we tend to go down these rabbit holes and we just make ourselves miserable in the process. You won't hear him doing that.
But you notice the difference is the people who do that do talk bad about the opposite thing. Those are the ones that are in the media. Chad Wright's not in the media.
Right.
He's in this alternate media space and he's very popular there, but he's not in the mainstream media. I've never seen him on NBC or Fox News or anywhere else because he's not that guy that makes people want to watch these programs.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, that's a,
and the greatest thing, and Holly asked me and I said, I really don't know. She said, what made this guy famous? I mean, what put him on Joe Rogan, Rich Roll, the Unashamed podcast? There's documentaries on YouTube about him. And he even says, I don't like this.
It's funny that you're saying this because I thought the same thing.
He's overly. He is completely unashamed of the gospel.
Yes.
He's got some theology differences from me, but that's fine. That's I'm fine with that. I fully think God's behind this guy in a big way.
Seems that way.
Because he is unashamedly, it's funny he was on the Unashamed podcast, that's where I first heard him, but he's been on the biggest podcast in the world, and you have to give hats off to these hosts. Rich Roll, I've never heard anybody on Rich Roll.
It's true.
Talk about the gospel. I have on Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan will talk to anybody and let anybody say anything.
Yep.
It's why I do like him, although I don't like the language sometimes, and it gets pretty rough on there. But he doesn't have a crazy, you know, he wasn't a POW or something like that that tends to, he doesn't have a best-selling book. I mean, David Goggins, he's got a lot of credentials in the media world that's kind of put him on that stage. But this guy's just a good old boy from North Georgia, right down the road from where we're talking right now. And he lives on 600 acres. And you should go watch some of the videos of his. I mean, he said, my day is complete when I'm with my pigs and my goats. And he said, because these things don't judge you. He said, I love, and he said the cool thing, I know I'm going off on a tangent. He said, but the thing about goats, he said, if you're having a bad day, they won't approach you.
Huh.
they pick up on that energy. And he said, and I know that if I go in the pens and my goats kind of walk away, I need to change my attitude. Huh. And it's just so the guy's name is Chad Wright. Look him up.
He's two on, D's. Two D's. Yeah, Chad with two D's.
Chad with two D's. I sent him a link to our podcast. So, Chad, if you're listening to this, we want you right here. I will put you in Dean's seat so you can see the turkeys and the deer over my right shoulder. But, yeah, I mean, I fully believe in giving credit where credit is due and putting – he needs to be on a pedestal because what he's saying, everybody needs to hear.
Well, and that's the reason why he's become popular is because he is unashamed.
Yeah.
And he boldly proclaims what he believes about Christ. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this is what I believe. You take it or leave it, but I'm telling you what I believe. And he just lets that out there. And in the meantime, he's also, like you said, he's not running anybody else down.
No.
He's just talking about what he believes in.
And that was refreshing. That was refreshing, but it was also convicting because you and I are kind of the same way here.
We are.
And even though I have, over the past year or two, I just don't watch the news hardly any anymore. I can still get in a political tizzy on things.
Yeah.
And he had such a good outlook on that you're not doing any good.
Yeah.
What you're doing when you're doing that is doing nobody any good, and it's only tearing you down. He said, focus on the things that you want to champion.
Yeah.
And your life is much better.
Yeah.
And you're building up whatever. I mean, he's championing the gospel, and look where it's taking him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It's awesome.
Yep. Faith will take you a long way.
So anyway.
Good story. And it goes right along with our story of the week this week. That's from Jerry Snyder. This one really touched my heart when I read this for the first time, and I hope it does yours too. It's called Honor Flight. The Marines I have seen around the world have the cleanest bodies, the filthiest minds, the highest morale, and the lowest morals of any group of animals I've ever seen. Thank God for the United States Marines. That was from First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt after visiting the Marines during World War II. If you're looking for a patriotic running adventure, I suggest the Marine Corps Marathon. It takes place in October with over 30,000 runners galloping up and down the streets of Washington, D.C. Somehow, the folks who keep the records overlooked my name when they made a list of celebrities who have finished this race. So let's correct that mistake now. Along with me, Jerry Snyder, there are some other famous people who finished this race, like Sean Astin and Drew Carey, TV host Oprah Winfrey, Vice President Al Gore, and Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. The inspiring finish for this race is the Marine Corps War Memorial, the famous statue of the Marines raising the flag on Iwo Jima in World War II. And here's a tip. If you want a really fast time, when you line up at the start line, run in front of a Marine with a bayonet on the end of his rifle. Keep running and don't look back. I graduated from the Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego, California, in the summer of 1970, but it wasn't until 54 years later that I felt like a real Marine. Following my basic training, I was assigned to a Marine unit aboard the USS Oriskany, a naval aircraft carrier. The planes from our ship flew airstrikes on North Vietnam. I was safe, not being part of the ground combat, and because of that, I felt a bit guilty, like I hadn't done my part. Then came Honor Flight, a national organization that flies veterans free on a one-day trip to Washington, D.C. Once they arrive, the day is spent touring all the monuments and activities honoring veterans. I was soon going to be 73. I had my ups and downs, but in the big picture, life had been good to me. So I decided to go on the trip and pay my respects to the 58,000 names of my generation on the Vietnam War Memorial Wall. I stood at the wall, reading the names and saying a prayer. I noticed another man standing beside me, a stranger, but like me, wearing a Marine hat. When he found the names of his friends on the wall, he began crying. I hugged him and held on. I gave him a handkerchief to wipe his tears, and then some folks from our tour group joined us. As they helped him into a wheelchair, I knew that the most important thing I did that day was comforting him. And finally, 54 years after boot camp, I felt like a real Marine. Semper Fi. That's Latin, which means always faithful, the motto of the United States Marines.
Wow.
That's a cool story. We should have had this on Memorial Day instead of Labor Day. Mm. would have fit well, huh? But it fits well with what we're just talking about with Chad Wright, huh?
Yeah.
Have you been to the wall in Washington, D.C.?
I was there just a few weeks ago.
Yeah?
Yeah. When I went to the Gettysburg thing, we started in D.C.
Okay.
And so I got there early, a couple hours before everybody else. So I walked around D.C. and I went to the Vietnam Memorial Wall, the Lincoln Memorial, Washington Monument, and all that stuff. Yeah, it really hits you. You know, you kind of go down that slope around where the wall is, and it's just, it's hard to imagine that many people died in that conflict. And I mean, it's a solemn place for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is a really good example of, as Christians, how we're supposed to be. We should be looking around. Mm-hmm. And we should be noticing the people around us who need comfort. And we should be trying to provide that comfort. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to give hugs or handkerchiefs. You know, that may be his thing. That might be your thing. Maybe mine's something else. But sure. It's, you know, we have this thing in Cahuta called Cahuta Cares, mm-hmm. where we feed kids who are hungry. And that's what we do. There are ways to impact others and to edify others. Miss Maples, I've talked about before, you know, she used to send people things in the mail, mm-hmm. just out of the blue. Yeah. You'd get this thing and it'd be like, it'd just make you smile.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things that we can do to build people up around us. John 15:13 says, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." I cannot fathom the idea of being in the military at wartime. You know, from a running standpoint, I consider myself pretty tough. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm a bit delusional. I don't know. But I feel like I'm fairly tough. But I can't imagine war. You know, I've got a friend of mine, David, who he talks about some of the things that he went through in Vietnam and what it was like to just lay down at night in Vietnam. And he shares this story where he's got a picture, an old Polaroid picture of this hole in the ground. And he explains that that hole in the ground was the spot where he was standing 20 minutes before that hole was made by a bomb. Mm. He was waiting for mail that day. And somebody just happened to have heard, just happened to hear that the mail wasn't going to be delivered that day. And so everybody could go back to what they were doing. And David, had that guy not walked by and told David that the mail wasn't going to be delivered today, he would have been standing there at the moment that bomb hit. And when you look at pictures like that, you see that, and you hear those stories, and you think about every night when you lay down to go to bed, you have no idea that somebody's not going to.
Sure.
I mean, it's just, I can't imagine being that scared. Mm-hmm. All the time. Can you?
No, and I think we take it for granted. I mean, it's why it's important to visit places like the Vietnam Memorial, mm-hmm. the World War II Memorial in D.C. It's kind of like a mission trip in some ways. You know, you go on mission and you realize just how good you have it here. And you go to, you talk with veterans like him, like Chad, even just people out and about, and you realize why we have it so good.
Yeah.
And it's because of the men and women who gave their life. But Dean, when I read this verse, it took me a different direction, which so many times it does.
Yeah.
Me and you, it takes us in different directions. I've had the idea of community on my mind for a while now. And I guess I asked myself this question when I read this. I said, do you have somebody in your life that you would lay down your life for? Now, obviously your wife and your kids. I think that's a given for any respectable person.
Yeah.
That I would gladly do that. But do you have other people in your life and that you would put into that category? And I do. And I think we have to. We have to have those people or not. And the whole idea of community is fleeting in our society. It's like, you know, we're going to talk about AI robots here in a little while. And just, gosh, that's so crazy. But I heard recently, I forget where I heard this. But, you know, our mind goes typically to the people that we share our struggles with. And that those are our real friends.
Mm-hmm.
And while that may be true, the person I was listening to said, your closest friends are the ones that you can share your victories with. And man, I thought about that. I was like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
But he went on to say that you will only share your victories with those people you feel won't judge you. Because sharing your victories can come across as boasting.
Yeah.
But you need people that you can share your victories with. And when he said it, I started thinking about some of my friends, and I thought, I mean, let's just go to a financial example. You know, you got a, let's say this isn't going to happen, but Upward gives you a $1 million bonus, yeah, which that's not going to happen. But who could you go tell that to?
Hmm.
Those are your closest friends.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't just tell anybody that.
Right. And I don't know. I don't know why I bring that up here, but I was just thinking about your closest friends and really identifying who those people are. Because if you go put that on social media, you're just going to get absolutely crucified on social media. And I think about a lot of my friends. I wouldn't tell that to you. Yeah. But there are a handful of people that I could go to and I said, man, I just need to celebrate with somebody. Because we do need to do that. It's not in a boastful posture.
Celebrate's a good word.
Yeah.
Yep.
And only those that you trust the most will celebrate with you.
Yep.
And so that was a great litmus test for me. Not that we need to be testing our friends. But that's even know why I go down that path. That question sent me down that
rabbit trail. I don't know. That's a good one, though. I like the thought, for sure. Ecclesiastes 3:1 says, to everything there is a season and a time, to every purpose under the heaven. And then one of those is a time to heal. There's a couple of ways you can look at this. You know, one, we're always going to have this list of things, all of these things that they're talking about. They're all happening at different times, and there's a time for each one of them to happen. But this is sometimes where I get off the rails, is I want to force that time to happen when Dean wants it to happen, right? And this story is a really, really great example, because Jerry's a Christian. Mm-hmm. Jerry wants to share Jesus with people. Mm-hmm. For sharing Jesus with people is absolutely a great thing to do, and we need to be doing it. But Jerry didn't need to share Jesus with that man in that moment. Mm-hmm. That was not the right thing or the right time for that to happen. There's a lot of good things that we think we need to force out there that don't always need to be forced out there. What he needed was that handkerchief and that hug. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be more to him than anything in that moment. Jerry's got a great sense of humor. He could have cracked a joke. Not appropriate. Right. Not in that moment. And that's where I think it's really important. I can look back in my life and see a lot of comments that I've made at the wrong times. Was I right? Yeah, I was right. I was 100% right. That's why I made the comment, because I was right. And I wanted everybody to know it. And I accomplished nothing, sort of like what you were talking about with Chad. Yeah. I got nothing done, and I regretted what I said afterwards. And why do we do that?
Sure.
we got to realize that when we talk about there's a time for everything, we got to wait till that time comes before we do that thing or share that story or whatever. So I don't know. That's the, what I thought about that. And remember the movie A Christmas Story? Mm-hmm. You know, where he says, over the years, I became quite a connoisseur of soap. Well,
yeah, yeah.
Over the years, I've become quite a connoisseur of my shoes because I've stuck my foot in my mouth.
Both, Dan. Yeah.
Psalm 34:18.
Christmas. You just said Christmas, didn't you? You got me wanting to put the Christmas tree out now.
Oh, no. I didn't mean to pull that
September,
trigger.
September, is it too early? Is Labor Day too early?
Psalm 34:18 says, "The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart and saves such as have a contrite spirit." This is really important. God wants to make us feel better when we're down. But this says he's near to those who have a broken heart. He's near to those who have broken. We still have to reach out to him, even in those moments. We have to make that connection. God doesn't necessarily make that connection to us. We make that connection to him. He's always close by. You know, if you find your, the old saying is, if you find yourself far away from God, it's not him that moved. Mm-hmm. You know, he's there. But the second part also tells us that our heart has to be right in order to make that connection as well. And that's just an important thing to recognize.
Yeah, I mean, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. I mean, the Bible, I mean, just in the Beatitudes alone, mm-hmm. it talks about the idea of being brokenhearted, that it's kind of a necessary thing, because if you're following Christ, you are going to have your heart broken. People are going to not agree with you that you thought would agree with you on things, or they break your trust or whatever it is. And the Bible's clear that if you walk, pick up your cross daily and follow me, that's not a picture of, you know, rainbows and roses.
Yeah.
That's a picture of heartache and disappointment and having your heart broken at times. Mm. But blessed are you in those moments. And I mean, it says it here that the Lord is near to those.
Yeah.
He has a special place for those people.
Wow.
That's comforting.
Yeah, it is. Have you ever been inspired by a veteran story?
You know, I was going to say this earlier, and I said I would come back to it. I am inspired by veteran story, but I think what inspires me most a lot of times, and Chad, you can kind of hear this when he talks, I'm inspired by those that I know have a story, but they don't talk about it.
Yeah, that's
there's
powerful.
A stoicism mm-hmm. about them that, You and maybe they should be talking about it, and maybe they are talking about it to the people closest to them, but they don't. Just like David, I'm sure he doesn't just go scream his story from the rooftops.
No,
it was a close encounter with a friend that he shared that with.
Yep.
And I think that is probably more inspiring than anything, is to know. I mean, Chad he went on 6 or 8 deployments. I don't remember what he said. You know, the guy saw stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, being an operator like that, you know it's in there. And mm-hmm. I respect that.
Yeah. Well, and David tells the story that there are things he's seen that he doesn't talk about and right. won't talk about yeah. because he doesn't want to bring them up.
Sure.
And yeah, that's, you're right. Those are the veterans that are the ones that it's the old speaking softly. Mm-hmm. thing. You know, it's those guys who speak softly and say profound things that you listen to the most. Mm-hmm. And that's
be the guy who doesn't say much so that when he does, people listen.
That's right. Yeah. In what ways do you honor the sacrifice of our veterans? I like to thank people. Mm-hmm. I like to be open about that. Mm-hmm. And you know, the thing about there are some people out there, and I know this is not a big portion of the population, but there's some people who are really down on military, and I get it. Nobody likes war.
No,
there may be a few military members who kind of do, yeah. but there are some of those. But for the most part, nobody likes war,
right.
and But we should be thankful that there are people willing to do it, because if not for them, where would we be right now? I don't know, but I don't think we'd be better off. That's for sure.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. And I worry that people don't understand the sacrifice, particularly young folks today. I mean, the last time we had anything that really drew out patriotism in this country was 9/11. And now there doesn't seem to be much of that. And I hate that. I always try at our house. We have a gathering on Memorial Day of our families. We have a pretty good number of folks at our house, and we always, that's part of our prayer. That's, we talk about it, because I think it's important for everybody to remember what's going on and what these guys have done over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, it's a simple thank you. I mean, when I learned that somebody has been in service, I mean, it's not much, but it's all I got.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's just acknowledging them for what they did, and we all should do that. We all should at least think that, because you see the old timers with the Vietnam hats on, Vietnam. You see them wearing the hats, and you know, you don't really see many World War II hats anymore.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff in there that we need to acknowledge. It was to keep us safe.
That's right. That's right.
And a simple thank you, I think, for those guys goes a long, long way.
Yep.
Doesn't have to be grand.
Nope.
You can tapping them on the shoulder when you're walking by them in the mall.
Yep.
And saying, thank you for what you did.
Yep, for sure. Last question. Have you ever had a God moment that changed your opinion of yourself?
For me, it was my salvation story. I mean, I will never forget. I thought I was on the road to heaven. I said a prayer, and I got dunked when I was 5 or 6 years old. But I was in Tunnel Hill First Baptist Church in 1998, and it was an evangelist, and his name is escaping me now, but he was doing a sermon on the wheat and the tares. And I, as soon as he started that message, I was like, yeah, I'm some good wheat. And by the end of that message, I realized I was an imposter. I was a fraud. I was living trying to look like a wheat, and I was nothing but a weed.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was pretty dramatic. I mean, I could not wait until that guy opened up the invitation to get down front. It really, my opinion of myself before that sermon was, I've got it all together. I help in the youth group. I'm, you know, 2 years out of high school. I'm engaged to my wife, and I've got it all together. And it's funny how God will humble you very quickly.
Especially in those times, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I suppose my thing that really changed my opinion of myself maybe was just before joining this ministry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my employer and I had parted ways under some contentious circumstances, let's just say. And for a while, I felt fine.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting up in the mornings when I felt like it. And Debbie liked it for a little while because, man, I was keeping her floors nice and clean and shiny. Because, you know, what else was I going to do? I wasn't going to sit around.
Sure.
So I was going to do something. So I was working with that. But, you know, that stuff gets old after a while. You start thinking about things. You start having conversations with people. And I start talking with people that I meet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do two dudes talk about when they meet?
Where do you work?
That's right.
Yeah.
What do you do? And my answer to that at that point, it hit me. I hadn't talked to anybody. Nobody had asked me that question. But I got to thinking about it. And it hit me that I'm a bum.
Yeah.
I don't have a job.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I thought in my mind. And so I got pretty low pretty fast. And I remember, like the snap of your fingers, God smacking me upside the head. I remember exactly where I was, exactly what I was doing. I remember exactly the moment when God said, dude, what are you doing? And he said, you are mine. You don't act like this. This is not who you are. And you need to realize that. And from that moment forward, my entire life changed. Mm. And it was because I was feeling sorry for myself when I should have been claiming victory. And ever since then, that's what I do.
Yeah. You can't see a mountain unless you're in a valley.
That's right.
Do you need something to keep you motivated to keep fit both physically and spiritually? Upward Running has what you need to keep you on track for both. Check out upwardrunning.com and join us for pennies a day. I promise you, you will not regret it.
So we have this story from Canadian Running. It says, are you faster than the world's fastest robot? China's first world humanoid robot games featured two-legged machines racing head-to-head in a 1,500-meter track showdown. Not only that, there was more going on there, too. It says, on Thursday, the world humanoid robot games kicked off in Beijing with two-legged droids competing in sports ranging from table tennis and soccer to dance, kickboxing, and most importantly, track and field. In a 1,500-meter race, the winner clocked 6 minutes and 34 seconds, a solid effort, but nearly double the human world record of 3:26. Some robots struggled to finish the event. Some didn't even make it past the starting line. One robot fell and lost an arm. Another machine's head flew off mid-race. One spectator called the event much more exciting than seeing real humans, which might not be surprising when competitors are literally falling to pieces. The games have drawn 280 teams from 16 countries, including Japan, Germany, and the U.S., with 500 robots competing across 26 sports. The machines are remotely operated by their teams based out of universities and private companies. The increasing prevalence of robots in China is a result of an aging population and a surge in demand for machines to provide assistance and care for the elderly. The need for automated machines in work environments also spiked due to a shrinking working population. The nation's robotics industry is reportedly projected to reach $54 billion U.S. dollars by 2030. The 2025 humanoid robot games are set to conclude on Sunday. I watched some of the video of this.
This is creepy, Dean.
Did you check out any of the video?
I didn't. No. I won't. Freaks me out.
It does me too.
We're about to be living in the real life Terminator.
Yeah. One of the things that I saw in watching some of the video of this event, like a robot would just basically just die. It would just be laying there. And so two guys would come out and they would... One would grab its arms, the other would grab its legs, and they'd carry this robot out. And it was so dystopian looking. Yeah. It was like watching them pull dead bodies out. And
yeah.
I can see why people say that was it. It was more interesting than watching humans because it was a freak show.
How much longer before we have like UFC for robots?
Oh yeah. Well, we already have what's it called? There's robot, isn't it called Robot Wars?
The little cars?
Yeah,
that's been around for years, but it's a car.
But it's not
emulating a human.
It's going to look like humans, yeah. Yeah, in watching these humans, you know, the way they move.
They're not humans, Dean, watching these robots.
Watching these robots.
There's the problem.
Yeah, see?
We'll start to interchange these things.
But they move so much like humans now. You know, just a year ago, I remember watching these things and thinking, they don't look like they're moving human. Now? They look almost like they move almost like humans move, and that's where it gets really creepy when you start watching them. And it just, I mean, you see them; they get through with a race, and then they slow down and they walk off the track as if they're this way, same way a human would do it. And it looks really strange to watch that happen.
So I didn't watch it, but do they look like humans, like with flesh, or is it still robot looking?
They're still robot looking.
Okay.
But they're shaped like humans. So, they've got two arms, two legs, hips, head. They look like humans.
You know, I still have never to this day put on a set of those virtual reality
glasses.
Me neither. you know, when the boys were young, the swim team, they would wear the VR goggles to see their stroke or whatever. I wouldn't let my kids do it. To me, there's just a, that's a door that we don't need to open.
Yeah, I know what you're
saying.
Because
it leads to so many other things that are just wrong.
Well, the scarier thing to me, scarier than the virtual reality thing to me, is when these robots do start looking like humans, mm-hmm. because that's coming at some mm-hmm. point in time. They're going to start looking like humans. And you've got AI integrated with it. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have people that are going to withdraw from society completely, and they're just going to live with their robot because mm-hmm. there's no need to interact with the rest of the world. They'll send their robot out to get their groceries for them, you know, because they can. It's going to happen, and it's going to be really, really bad for society.
And it's going to happen really fast, I feel.
Yeah. That's the way it feels. Like I said, watching those robots a year ago versus today, the way they move, it's a big difference.
And there's some influential voices throwing warning. At least I don't know if it's happening, but I mean, how do you get a handle on it? How do you, is it, I don't know. I mean, how do you, I'm not big on government in a lot of ways, but is that the answer, that it's somehow held in check, but then you got overseas? And I mean, I
don't know how you do it. I just know you can see it coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like there's anything you can do to stop it. So I hope somebody smarter than me can figure out how to get there, because it's a scary landscape out there.
Sure.
It's going to be even harder to reach people for Christ when we get to this point, for sure.
Maybe. Or maybe it goes the other way.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, the contrast will be more stark.
That's for sure.
Which sometimes in history has been a good thing.
That's true.
So
it's a good point. Well, it's time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something that I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Don't you love to watch two dogs on opposite sides of a fence playing together? It'll bring a smile to your face. Well, what can we learn from them? I'm going to tell you. This one's called Fence Line Theology. Have you ever seen two dogs living on opposite sides of the same fence? You know what happens. They lock eyes. The chase is on. Back and forth, again and again, like the canine version of track and field, except neither ever seems to win. Over time, they don't just run. They excavate a trench deep enough to qualify as a World War I artifact. Grass? Forget it. That patch is officially retired from yard duty as long as those two patrol the line. Now, believe it or not, those crazy dogs have something important to teach us humans. We have Dr. Phil, sure. We can also mine wisdom from Fido. First lesson, consistency matters. One or two sprints won't carve a path. If the dogs ran for 24 hours straight, it would just make them tired and possibly eligible for their own sports drink commercial. But weeks and months of daily laps, now that's what changes the landscape. It works the same way with us. One spinach smoothie or run won't transform your life. You've got to keep showing up. Second lesson, momentum makes it easier. Once the grass is gone, the running gets smoother. No resistance, just pure zoomies. For us, once a habit is forged, it's less of a struggle and more of a glide. Third lesson, joy shows up. For those dogs, that dirt path is basically Disney World, the highlight of their day. They don't run it because they have to. They run it because it's fun. And yes, they're high on doggy endorphins the whole time. If dogs could laugh, you'd hear it echoing through the neighborhood. Here's where it applies. The more we run, the easier it gets. Eventually, lacing up your shoes isn't a chore. It's what you want to do. And the bonus? You get that same goofy, tongue-flopping grin as the dogs. But don't worry. Yours will be less drooly, hopefully. Now let's switch gears. Just like dogs make paths through the grass, we make mental paths in life. That's why when you see someone healthy who enjoys exercising, you think, what mystical protein shake are they drinking? The truth is,
They just wore down the grass. They repeated healthy choices long enough until they craved them. It wasn't magic. It was consistency, plus a sprinkle of stubbornness, perhaps. Reading the Bible can work the same way. At first, it might feel like forced labor. You may ask, how is this exciting again? But keep at it, and suddenly the words leap out at you. Verses you've read a dozen times hit you differently. Eventually, you'll find yourself thinking, wow, this is actually inspiring, and no one even had to offer me a squeaky toy to get here. So here's the deal. The next time you watch two dogs sprinting like furry Olympians along a fence line, enjoy the show. But go ask yourself, what path am I wearing down? Healthy habits? Time with God? Or just Netflix marathons that create a very comfortable couch groove, but not much else? Be like the fence dogs. Run your path. Wear out your Bible. And if anyone asks you why you're grinning so much, just say, I've got endorphins and maybe a little dog in me.
That's a great story, Dean. When I read the title, I thought you were going to go somewhere else. I thought you were going to talk about the two dogs who fight on each side of the fence. And then when the fence opens, they just kind of walk each other and start licking each other, which to me is an analogy for what we do on social media.
You're right. I mean,
social media is our fence.
Yeah.
We bark at each other, but then when we see each other out in public, we're like, oh, hey, buddy, you know, it's... I thought that's where you were going.
That's funny. This isn't the first time I've written about dogs, but
maybe
we need to pay more attention to what they're doing.
You can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, you can. Well, we've talked about this message for years. The truth is that I love to go out and run. I enjoy it. I can't wait until the time. I've been running earlier and earlier, it seems, because I can't wait to get out and run. And that's a good thing, but I didn't get here overnight. And I don't feel that way every day. Mm-hmm. There are days where I don't really feel like getting out there. But you have to do it for a while for it to get easier. Just like those dogs wearing down that path, and that path becomes easier to run. And it's like, I thought about it from you have a zero turn mower. It probably didn't take you long to learn a zero turn mower because you were, mm-hmm. You were in the equipment business before that or dealing with stuff like that. But when I first drove a zero turn mower, I had never driven anything like that before in my life. And so my lawnmower wasn't working. So I decided I was going to borrow a zero turn from my son, his wife, to cut my grass. And so I went over there with my trailer and they brought out the lawnmower because I thought if I replace my lawnmower, I think I might want a zero turn, but I need to drive one just to see. I couldn't put it on the trailer. I couldn't drive it straight. It's not intuitive if you've not been doing it.
Mm-hmm. It's opposite.
Yes. It's really, really awkward.
Yeah.
And that first time I took it out on my lawn, I broke the cap off of the access point to my septic system because I ran over it because I went the wrong way with the handle, right? But here's my point. I eventually bought a zero turn mower, and now I have a zero turn mower. And now I can guide that thing around the
precision.
Yes, just wherever I want to go, I can go with that thing. And it's awesome. But man, that first time I thought, I don't want one of these things. I can't drive it.
I think to me it come natural, not because of my, Bobcat and equipment background. It was because I grew up in the era of the green machine.
Yeah.
Do you remember the green machine? It was like the big wheel, but it had the handles like this, and everything was opposite. So as a kid, I learned basically the tenets of a zero turn mower.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, your point in here is just spot on, and we talk about it so much that consistency far outweighs anything you can do in anything you're doing.
Yeah.
But let's just park on training. Let's park on the sport of running. Some don't like it when I say this, but I believe this at the core of my being. The fundamentals of a training plan, meaning what days you do what, are you doing base, strength, speed, race prep, are you doing hills or tempo or track work? That doesn't even compare in comparison, not even close to consistency.
Yeah.
Is getting out there when you're supposed to be out there, even if you're not hitting that training plan, that means more to your fitness, to your training, even if it's walking. The fact that you're doing it day in and day out when you're supposed to be doing it far outweighs the plan you're given.
That's the number one. Then it's not even close.
Yeah. Second is a distant second, which is probably the training principles.
Right.
But consistency's
just
get out there and move.
Totally
and
agree.
And it will change your body, your mind, your life in ways that you want it to change. Just doing that alone.
You're way better off. If you don't feel like running one day, you're way better off getting off the couch and going outside and walking a couple of miles anyway.
And that will do more for you than the workout you crushed last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the mindset.
But that is counter to what, I mean, we're not your typical coaches. I will say that, but it does go counter to a lot of coaching philosophies.
Yeah. Yeah. But you got to get through, just like I said, with the lawnmower, you got to get through the awkward stage. You got to get through that stage where it really doesn't feel comfortable to get out there every day and get to that point where you can at least, because once you get consistent, you become comfortable fairly quickly.
And for you, consistent is every day.
Yeah.
For some people, consistent is 3 days a week. Yep. Whatever it is, the consistency part is the most, I mean, even you hear people talk, we don't get into strength work much, but they'll say that you can do strength training 3 days a week and be kind of on and off and not just regular. It's far more effective to do it once a week, but do it every week.
Mm-hmm.
The consistency is what helps you in strength training, just like in, but it goes to everything in our life.
That's right.
This principle applies.
It does. And Bible study is the same way, right? Matter of fact, we're going through, if you are listening to this and you have a hard time reading your Bible and really getting into that, let me make a suggestion. We've been going through these. There's the Bible Project is the name of the group. And they have these videos that are summaries of the books of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 7-minute video of, I think like Genesis is broken into two different videos. So it's 14 minutes total. But it's a summary of the book. And it explains the summary of the book. And what it does to me is it makes reading those stories in the Bible, puts them in context. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a hard time with just figuring out where to start and what to do, go to the Bible Project and watch their summaries of the book, and then read that book, and you'll find that thing coming to life a little bit more than you've ever felt before.
It's kind of like watching The Chosen and then going and reading the Gospels. I mean, there's some people throw rocks at The Chosen, and I don't understand that, number one. But for me, it just, and some people say this is wrong to think this way. But to me, Peter has a personality now.
Yeah.
I mean, you read scripture and you know, okay, Peter's a hothead. But now I've got a visual of that. When I think of Peter, I think of the guy in The Chosen.
Yeah.
Is that wrong? I don't know. We'll debate that. I mean, that's a different debate for a different time. When I think of Jesus, Jonathan Rumi pops in my head. Yeah. Now that's, I don't know what to say about that. We're probably going to get some mail on this one. But
having a picture makes a difference.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, there are pictures of Jesus all over the world hanging in churches everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And those aren't actually pictures of Jesus. So why is The Chosen any different?
Right.
You know?
It's not.
I mean, to hear Jonathan Rumi talk about it, I would not want to be him.
No.
I mean, he, you can feel the weight of it when you hear him talk kind of off camera and talk about what the personality he's become. I mean, people that we won't get into all that, but, I don't even know where I was going with that. I don't even know where we're at on here, but it makes a difference to anything you can do to bring scripture to life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you'll get to the point to where reading the scripture by itself is exciting.
Yeah. Little things like, for example, I was just talking about Genesis, and then the next book is Exodus. Genesis, Exodus. You finish reading the story of Joseph in Genesis, mm-hmm. and you go right over to the story in Exodus. Mm-hmm. And it just flows right through, right? Mm-hmm. No, there were 400 years mm-hmm. between those two books, the end of one and the beginning of the other. And when you know that, it completely changes the story and what you have in your mind. And so just understanding context and things like that, and that's what you're talking about with when you have a picture of what Jesus looks like when you're reading that story, it just makes that story more real to you when mm-hmm. when you feel like you've got a picture in your head of what that could have looked like.
And then on the flip side, there's, especially in the New Testament, there's places where, I mean, chapters and verses weren't in the original manuscripts.
Yeah.
There's places where a chapter ends and the next chapter begins and you think, oh, this is a different time. It's the same conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about the, I'm trying to think of what the story is called. It's where Jesus goes to the mountain. He's talking to Moses. Is that the Transfiguration?
Yeah.
I mean, that is broken up into at least a couple chapters, but it's all the same story. But because of that chapter break, sometimes we think that that's a different time. I know we're getting off on a tangent here, I'm all for experiencing the Bible in whatever way.
Yep.
Don't go throw rocks at The Chosen and meanwhile you're binging whatever you're watching on Netflix.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you always wanted to read through the entire Bible but never found the time to do it? Well, let me do it for you. Sign up for the self-paced Bible in a Year challenge and start listening today. Every day, I read a few chapters from the Bible and give you helpful tips and encouraging quotes. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for?
All right, so we're back, and maybe I was a little harsh right there at the end of that. I just got convicted. I hope everybody gets my point. I hope you get my point.
It was light.
It wasn't meant
to be heavy.
It's The Chosen is not scripture.
True.
But it is a tool that helps us better understand scripture. To me, it's no different than commentary.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have a MacArthur study Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, MacArthur's commentary, I kind of put it in the same camp as The Chosen. Does The Chosen take some liberties? You know, I'm thinking of the chicken fight scene. Did Jesus really chicken fight? Probably not. But I think what it was trying to do was humanize Jesus, which he was fully human.
That's
just
right.
Like everything in the MacArthur commentary, I'm sure is not 100% accurate, but commentary is meant to help us understand, just like Jesus talked in parables.
Sure.
Were those things meant to be taken literally? No. It's where a lot of Pharisees went off the rails sometimes.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just want to kind of explain that.
Good. Well, every week I share a reason why running and walking is so awesome. This week, it gives our brain something to keep it stimulated. You know, in today's world, it's easy to get by without thinking too much, right? Especially if you have like a job that's really repetitive. And I know running is repetitive, but it does make us think and reason. You know, I mentioned this past weekend, I was in trouble in the heat. I had to cut my run short. My brain was constantly trying to gauge how much further can I go before I've gone too far. There's a lot of that going on in our brain when we run, when you're trying to figure out how to get faster, how to keep going when you're running and it hurts. this constant judging that's going on in your mind is really good for our minds, I think.
Sure.
I know I do some, I like to do things that stimulate my brain just for fun. Mm-hmm. So if, an example is there's this site where you go on and it has a map and then it puts up the name of a country and you have to find that country and click on it and it'll tell you whether you were right or wrong. And it's amazing how many countries are in Africa and Europe that you don't really think about much until you have to try to find it on a map.
Yeah.
But it stimulates your brain. That's my point, is it stimulates your brain. And we should all be doing something that helps us stimulate our brain. And running is one of those things that I think does help stimulate your brain. But there are other things, too, that you can do.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, it's over the past few years, it's been podcasts. I mean, just listen. I mean, that really, especially some of the deep thought-provoking ones, it's a good brain exercise.
For sure.
Yeah,
it's a good point.
I think podcasts have taken the place of Sudoku and crossword puzzles nowadays.
Maybe. I wanted to tell a story about that I heard last night from my pastor's wife. And it was, I just love God's stories. Mm-hmm. And this has nothing to do with running. Mm-hmm. This is normally a segment where we talk about something specific to running. This has nothing to do with running. But Mary Lynn she takes part in a retreat that she's been doing for 44 years. Mm-hmm. So she's been consistently at this for a long time. She told us a great story about how she got involved in all of that. But the one story that she was telling was Mary Lynn's mother was dying, quite literally, and she was taking care of her mother. And it came time for this retreat that she did every year for, at this point, well over 35 years at this point. And it was really weighing on her. She thought, I can't go do that. I have to take care of my mother. And she prayed about it. She prayed about it. And she felt like God kind of released her and said, you need to go do the retreat. And then, as fate would have it, her mother actually broke her hip. And she wound up having 24-hour care during the time when she was going to be gone, God kind of working things out for her so she didn't have to worry about her. And so she left. She goes to her retreat. She's at her retreat. And as she's at her retreat, she's just not got the enthusiasm, the excitement, and everything she needs to get up in front of people and talk to them. And she just can't get herself motivated. And she's just feeling guilty and thinking about her mother the whole time she's there. And she's wondering, should she even be there? Well, every year they have a project that they have to do. And so they were going to do, people had talked about this school that needed to get built. Well, this school was going to, it was a two-story school. It was going to be really expensive. They didn't have the funds for it. She couldn't get the funds for it quickly. And so she was like, God, we can't do that project. And so people were asking her, what project are we going to do this year? I've brought my money to donate. And she said, I don't think we're going to do a project this year. And well, this goes on. And she finally says, she feels convicted that God is telling her she needs to do this project. And she says, God, I don't know how we could possibly make this happen. So she prays to God and says, I'll tell you what, God, if you bring me $10,000 before we start this event, before we start the event, the gathering of people, before we start this event, $10,000 and we'll do it. But otherwise, I'm in my mind, you have said you've closed the door to this. So that's her bargain with God, $10,000. Well, then somebody comes up to her and gives her a $1,000 check. And so she begins to think, well, God's bringing that money in. Maybe I need to do this. And then at 4 o'clock the next morning, the morning before she's supposed to start this event, God wakes her up at 4 o'clock in the morning and says, I told you, you made the deal. It's $10,000. And she's like, okay. And God very clearly tells her, don't start this project unless you get that $10,000. And she's like, okay. She had kind of met, you know, she's kind of waffling back and forth, and she doesn't know what to think at this point. So that morning, she's literally stepping onto the stage to start the event. And she's like, well, God didn't bring the $10,000. And so I guess we're not supposed to do this project. She felt really convicted of that. And so she's two steps up onto the three steps it takes to get up there, and a lady taps her on the shoulder. She's bawling her eyes out, and this lady looks at her, and she's like, I don't have time for this. We need to get this thing started. We need to get it started on time, and I don't have time for problems right now. And she turns, but she sees this lady is just sobbing, and she's like, well, what can I help you with? And she says, Mary Lynn, I don't know what this is about, but at 4 o'clock this morning, God woke me up and said, you need to give Mary Lynn $10,000. She wrote, and she handed her a check for $10,000. And is that not the most amazing story? I mean, I got goosebumps.
Yeah.
But she tells this story, and then they say, okay, they have to gather up $100,000 to do this project. Well, they gather up. She's got $16,000 at this point because somebody also gave her a $5,000 check just after that. So she's got $16,000 to start. But she's talking with the project coordinator that's going to make sure this thing gets built. It's down in South America. And the lady says, well, we're not going to start on it until we get all the money. And she's like, well, that makes sense. That's practical. So a couple of months later, she calls the lady up and she says, how are we doing on the fundraising for the project? She just wants to follow up and make sure they're making progress. And she goes, oh, Mary Lynn, that's already been built. And she says, well, how did that happen? I haven't done anything. And she says, well, all those ladies who saw what you were going through with your mother, they all just pitched in and decided they were going to get it done for you. And they did it. And it's built. And it's done.
Wow.
Isn't that an incredible story? I mean, I just loved hearing it. I just wanted to share it with everybody because I figured everybody would love that story. God is out there doing amazing things and coordinating things if we'll just be faithful to him. And is everybody going to wind up with making a deal with God for $10,000? No. But God clearly had this all mapped out, and Mary Lynn was being faithful. She did not want to leave. She didn't want to go. Her mother was in bad shape.
Yeah.
She didn't want to leave her. But God told her to, and she did. And it was hard. And then she didn't want to start this thing, this project. But God told her to, and she did. And that's just the way God leads us from one thing to another.
I'm trying to remember. Is this Jimmy Hutto's?
No.
Is Jimmy Hutto at your church right now?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. No. You heard a similar story? I can't tell how many stories I've heard like
this. No, I'm trying
to
think if this was Jimmy's wife. I had her picture in my mind when you were telling that story. For whatever reason, I thought Jimmy was your interim for right now.
No, Tommy Kreider is our interim right now.
Tommy. No, I had a picture of Tommy in my head. Okay. I said Jimmy Hutto, Tommy Kreider's wife. So I've got a picture of her in my head.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good stuff, huh?
White hair, Tommy.
Yeah. Good stuff.
That's
good stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, if we're going to talk about any running this weekend, or actually it was yesterday as we record this, in Lausanne, Switzerland, they had a track meet and it was pouring down, raining, driving rain.
And they ran it anyway.
They ran it anyway. I love it. They were doing the high jump. They did the shot put. They did all of the field event. They were doing pole vault, all of this stuff in the rain. It was great. I loved it.
You won't see a high school in America do that.
Nope. But they'll do it in Switzerland.
That's awesome.
I thought it was great. Times weren't great, but the races were fun to watch. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely. I mean, they cancel football games now for rain.
Yeah. Come on. The guys are running the 5,000 meters, and all the guys were running with squinty eyes because the rain was driving in their face. It was great.
You know, that's triathlon. Triathlon will do that.
Yep.
But track and field, even like I said, football games nowadays. I mean, I think back to when I was in high school. I didn't play football, but some of the best, most hardcore games were in the pouring rain. Everybody's mud. I mean, think about some of the most memorable NFL games.
Yep.
You know, it's driving snow or rain. You can't even see the field because of the cameras and all the rain.
Yep.
I don't know.
It's an ice bowl.
We're getting soft. Do hard things.
Well, our trivia question for this week. In the late 19th century, running and or walking were sometimes called by a different name. Did you know that? Something other than running and walking. What was that term? And if you know the answer to that, you can send that in to dean@upward.org. And if you're the first member to send that correct answer in, you'll win $20 off in the store.
I don't have a clue. I mean, what is another word for walking and running?
There is one. There is one.
And it's grouped together, walking and running.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay.
So, yeah, send that in. I'll give you a hint. The hint is it's closer related to walking than it is to running, but it applied to both.
Okay.
All right. Our motivational thought of the week comes from Albert Camus. He said, sometimes carrying on, just carrying on, is the superhuman achievement. You know, it's always important to understand that sometimes just getting out there, the consistency we were talking about a little while ago, is the thing. That's the major thing. That's the hurdle you need to overcome, is just getting out there and putting in that first step. And sometimes it is a superhuman thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's okay to recognize that. It's good to recognize that.
Sure, sure.
So,
all right, Dean, September 30th is fast approaching. That is the kickoff to the Couch to Marathon starting September 30th, and we'll graduate 1 year from then at the Cannonball Marathon in
Greensboro.
Greensboro. I get Greenville and Greensboro mixed up. So, yeah, if you've always wanted to run a marathon in the fall, we have the one in the that's in January down at Gulf Shores, but we've got the Cannonball Marathon now, so... join us.
Yeah.
If it's on your bucket list, or maybe you were just planning on doing one anyway, we want you to join us. September the 30th, we'll be doing a live kickoff, you and I, and it's going to be a ton of fun.
It will be a blast, I am sure. So join us. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.